Welcome to Virtualization University. My name is Dave Payne, and I will be your instructor today. We've put together a five-part series about virtualization technologies that we're going to jump into, this being the first of the five. Briefly, the things we're going to cover in these next five videos. We're going to start out with a baseline of virtualization in this session called Server Virtualization 101. Our second video or presentation is going to be all about moving from a test or starting environment into full-out production. The third will be really the intention of opening people's eyes to what virtualization can do, and it's entitled The Many Applications of Virtualization. The fourth will be focused on high availability, and the fifth will cover disaster recovery. So thanks for joining us, and let's just jump right in. So I presume you're tuning into this video presentation because you're probably either fairly new to virtualization, maybe you've implemented it and you're just getting started with the technology, but you may have hit some sort of roadblock or just have a desire to figure out where to go next. And so that being said, you've come to the right place. I've been involved in the virtualization market for about 7 or 8 years now, helping companies of all sizes and types to understand what virtualization can do, how it can benefit them, and how they might implement it best in their environment. So we're going to cover some of those best practices learned from the field today. So to get started, let's talk about the genesis of this virtualization movement. It's become quite a movement over the last several years. About 10 years ago now, a little company called VMware started out and introduced a little product called VMware Workstation. Quickly, this product developed a cult following in the developer ranks because finally they were able to take their PCs off their desk, all these extra machines that they needed to test, every little configuration or situation that they encountered, and they could consolidate that down to one machine, declutter their lives and start really working from images instead of physical machines. And VMware quickly figured out that this technology could go somewhere. If it worked well for developers and workstations, why couldn't it work for servers and data centers and those high-dollar applications? So over the next several years, VMware advanced the technology into the server market. And around 2002-2003 timeframe, it just took off. And the market started to figure out that this technology was something else and had great benefits. It could save money, reduce administrative time, and really be a panacea for the problems that we've been encountering in IT for so long. So VMware came out with virtual infrastructure is what it was called. And that's what we're going to dig into now. So let's jump into the technology. To set a baseline on how the technology works, I'd like to use an analogy to describe this, something we can all be familiar with. Often as I converse with people about what virtualization is, they say, virtual what? Right? It's not a common word. It's a word that we really made up to fit our uses. However, the concept of virtualization has been around for eons. In the computer science world, it really means it's a layer of abstraction between one device and another. When I say that to people, they get the same confused look on their face. So to draw an analogy, let's think about it this way. Let's refer to the slide here. Let's just imagine that we live in a world where the only vehicle that you can drive is a bus. It's the only vehicle you can buy and you can put on the road. And we tend to be people that can't get along with each other, so we can't share the same vehicle. So what you find out on the highway is you have a bunch of buses driving down the road, one person per bus, and pretty soon the whole highway gets saturated and we can only fit so many people on there. The problem is we have a lot more people than we have space on our highways. So one day in this little virtual world that we live in, or this virtual reality, someone decided that they might want to solve this problem, right? Why can't we get more than one person in the bus? Well, the argument is we can't get along with each other. So they invented what we call partitions or seats, right? And we gave everyone their own little space on a bus. And so now we could go from having one person on that bus to 10, 15, 20, you name it. The size of your bus is only going to limit the number of people you can fit on there. And so as you look at what the highway changes from in the first scenario, where we say we have 15 buses on this highway and it's fully clogged, but we're only getting 15 people through at a time. If we can stack 15, 20, 30 people per bus, all of a sudden we can have one bus or two buses and get just as many people through, and our utilization is much better, right? Essentially, that analogy describes the building block of virtualization. You know, the same problem has existed in our data centers for well over a decade. As the PC phenomena really exploded through the early and late 90s and the early 2000s, we had this proliferation of PC-based servers just fill our data centers up, and we our appetite was insatiable for them. But the problem that we discovered was that, much like our bus analogy, the applications that we run on those servers don't get along well with each other. They all needed to be isolated from one another. And the only way that we had to isolate a application from another application was to put it on its own bus, aka its own server. And so we ended up buying one server for every application that was deployed in our data centers. And we ended up with an enormous amount of capacity, but no ability to use it. So virtualization came along and said, we're going to solve that problem. We're going to partition those servers up so that the applications can run together. They can share partition, or they can share the same machine, but we can fully isolate them from one another. You know, and then by so doing, we can drive our utilization of these systems up. We can buy better systems, actually, because we don't need so many. And we can really get the kind of performance and availability that we need out of our data centers. So let's look at the next slide where we'll actually look at the architecture of a traditional x86 server. And so you'll see here what a typical server looks like. And we'll refer to this quite a bit over the next several sessions, where one server is comprised of the four core components: CPU, or a processor, memory, network, and disk resources. Okay, in a traditional implementation, we'll layer an operating system like Windows or Linux or some other general purpose operating system on top of that hardware, and they'll put our application on there, right? And so, as we just described, the inherent disadvantages of that is we can typically only get about one application per server. That software and hardware are tightly coupled together, right? When we refer to a server in the old world, we mean the whole thing, the hardware, the software, the application. It's all the server, right? And they're very difficult to separate. We have situations like this where we have enormous amounts of capacity, but our utilization is 5% at best, right? So if we look at what a virtual system looks like, it's a slight modification of the same system. Same hardware, same commodity approach, where so we can get the benefits of that, you know, inexpensive and readily accessible PC hardware. But instead of putting a normal operating system on top of the hardware, we put a virtualization layer. And this gives us enormous flexibility, where now we can create these partitions, or we'll call them from now on virtual machines, as opposed to a physical machine. And we can create as many virtual machines as we need to satisfy the application requirements. And drive the utilization of that server up until it's completely full. There's several basic concepts that help us really understand where what makes virtualization tick. Very simple. We'll use the acronym PIES, P-I-E-S. So the first is partitioning, right? We've talked a lot about this, where we can partition a machine up into multiple virtual machines. It's got an attribute of isolation. So one operating system or application is fully isolated from the others. They have no awareness of their neighbors sharing the same hardware, and they're encapsulated. And this is a major benefit that really helps to enable a lot of other features that we'll get into in the high availability and disaster recovery discussions. The encapsulation component means that a virtual machine is fully encapsulated or enclosed into one or a very small handful of files. So as opposed to a physical system where we have hundreds or even thousands of files that make up a machine, here with virtualization we have one or two files that contains the entire server. So if we can move a file from point A to point B, we can move our server from point A to point B. And you can start to imagine that migrations and upgrades and things of this nature become much easier to do. The last concept in our acronym PIES is security, right? And virtual machines are inherently very secure. In fact, they are, for all intents and purposes, exactly identical to a physical machine in every way, except that they have some extra security advantages that we'll get into at another point. So we talked about the history of virtualization, where we went from workstations to servers, and quickly what happened was IT administrators and businesses said, hey, we want more than just the ability to partition up a single machine. We want to be able to use this kind of technology all throughout our data center. So the response from the industry was, we'll create what's called virtual infrastructure. And what virtual infrastructure means, looking at the graphic on the right side of your screen, is essentially a pooling of all the resources in a data center. And so we take this core virtualization technology and we can layer it all the way across the data center. So it'll incorporate all of the CPU resources in the data center, memory, network, and disk resources. We'll create these four distinct pools of that compute power, and then we can abstract all of that from the actual machines with this virtualization layer, and it will play essentially a traffic cop or a scheduling resource to make sure that the applications that you deploy get the right amount of access from this pool of resources on demand, meaning whenever they need it. And when they don't need it anymore, that resource is returned back to the pool and made available for someone else. And in so doing, we have a very dynamic and fluid type of approach to our data centers versus the very static and difficult to change method we were using before. So let's talk about some of the benefits as we start to virtualize. You can imagine with the same analogy where we took, 50 buses and combined them down into one, where we're taking maybe 20 or 30 servers and combining that down into one, or maybe even a data center of hundreds of servers and consolidating into just a few, that there's enormous amounts of savings to be had. And just to highlight a few of those, we'll talk about this slide where we show a typical cost savings of a virtual machine over, say, a 3-year period. So if you look at some of those benefits, we're going to reduce the amount of servers on the floor. And by reducing the amount of servers, we'll have an automatic effect on the rest of the facilities in the data center, right? We won't need as much space. We won't generate as much heat. We won't need as much power. We'll need less cables to run all the way around the data center. We're going to have this enormous surplus of capacity, which is great. So if you were to take the savings to be had with that across server hardware and the power and cooling reductions, the real estate costs, et cetera, you're looking at a 3-year savings, which is fairly typical and has been achieved by many of, $7,000 to $10,000 per machine. So there's a lot of savings to be had just in those physical systems alone. Also, there's savings to be had on the software side, which is a much greater conversation, but certainly an area where should be considered. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, as we move from a physical environment to a virtual environment, we're not just changing our compute infrastructure, but in order to really take advantage of that, you're selling yourself short if you don't have a sort of a philosophical or mental change in how you manage the data center. I'd like to start referring to a virtual infrastructure. The word cloud and utility has been used a lot in our IT vernacular and in the marketing information you've probably seen lately. What is this utility? What is this cloud? Well, simply put, the whole virtual infrastructure that we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes is an internal cloud, right? It's cloud computing that is put up and controlled by you. And the fact that it is a cloud, it can tap into other clouds or other utilities that are external from you. But this mental change that I'm talking about, or this change in how we look at our systems, we really need to become utility-minded, right? We need to think about delivering IT, not as we're delivering technology to our customers, but we're really delivering technology as a service, right? And our customers, meaning our businesses that purchase the technology that we support, they're not entirely interested in buying technology, right? And that might be a surprise to a lot of IT people. What they're really interested in is getting the type of performance, the application functionality, the things that make their businesses work, right? They could do without the technology, but the reality is they need to use it, right? And so we deal with those realities. And if we can look at presenting and delivering IT as a service, we're going to be much more successful. And then our customers can pay for what they need, much like we use a water utility or a power utility. When you plug your machine into the wall, it's going to draw a certain amount of power. When you get your bill at the end of the month, you're going to pay only for the amount of power that you consumed, regardless of the amount of capacity that the nuclear power plant or other power station has that was serving you. IT needs to be done the same way. Virtualization allows us to act not just think that way, but execute that way. So let's talk about how our life might change as we move from this physical, traditional paradigm to a virtual machine or virtual infrastructure paradigm. First of all, from a utilization perspective, we've talked a lot about this. Our utilization can go way up, but our hardware costs go way down. We can buy less hardware and get a lot more bang for that buck. So we can be investing in more reliable, better, higher performance systems versus the kind of the cheaper, lower end of that spectrum before. One of the other ways that our life can change is the way we deploy systems, right? We, in the traditional sense or the physical paradigm, deploying systems was a very difficult thing to do. It took a lot of time. You know, it might take 2 or 3 weeks to get a system ordered and provisioned. In the virtual world, we can literally spin up a machine in a matter of minutes. It's a request and a click of a button, and the machine is ready to go. So this is great because we have a lot of agility, we have a lot of velocity, we can deploy systems quicker. However, it can expose some of the weaknesses in the other parts of our system. Another thing that changes is our ability to deliver high availability. It's not that we weren't able to have highly available systems before, but they were much more complex, much more expensive, and we could only reserve our highly available functions for our most important and critical systems. With virtual infrastructure, we can extend high availability to more of the systems, if not all of them, at a very affordable manner. Our physical infrastructure changes quite a bit, and we've talked about that, right? How our facilities will change. We might use less space, but the catch there is in that smaller footprint that we use, we might need two or three or even 10 times as much power and cooling in those targeted areas. So that's one thing to take a look at when we're refactoring our data centers is that concentration of heat and cooling requirements and power requirements. In addition, we'll talk about migrations, right? Migrations change quite a bit. The flexibility of virtualization, the fact that these systems are encapsulated into a couple sets of files, makes them very mobile. And so if we want to change the hardware footprint out from maybe an older server technology to a newer server technology, it becomes very feasible to do that in a very fast manner versus the physical environment where it was extremely difficult to do migrations. And we would often push off projects because we didn't want to deal with the pain and hassle of migrating them. Well, to recap the things that we've learned today, we've talked a lot about the history of virtualization and how we got into the mess that we're in, how virtualization has addressed that, and really laid the foundation for the building blocks that we'll be discussing in the next several videos. We talked about the opportunities that exist with virtualization and really put out some words of encouragement and caution at the same time that life will change as we move from a physical to virtual world. It can change very much for the better, and if we can take a methodical approach to that, it will be a much better future. Well, thanks for joining me for this first session, Server Virtualization 101. Hope you've enjoyed it. We've got another several sessions coming up, and please come back for our next session, which is moving from test to production. Thank you.